Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by 1,000 miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. And now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is Jamie Jordan, and this is an out-of-sync edition of Gaming Uncensored. And of course, Tommy's sitting over there. What's on the show this week, sir?
We've got a few things to talk about. We've got Steam telling us we don't own games, which we've known for a long time.
Right.
But worth mentioning, getting into the details of that. Some new patent technology from Sony and new hardware from Nintendo. I don't know if everybody caught this. Nintendo has new hardware, and we're going to talk about it.
It's not what you think it is, but it's new hardware.
It is new hardware. And on top of all that, Tokyo Game Show happened since last we did a show. So we'll talk a little bit about things from Tokyo Game Show. Honestly, nothing too major, and it happened right after we did the last show, and so it's a little bit out of date at this point, but we'll hit on that too. But exciting stuff. So good times.
We should actually be fired, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But first, we should say thanks to the Patreon guys, one of which is back.
Yes, apparently. It is good to have Kavash back sending us money. We'll take anybody that wants to send us money. And so, and we'll say your name. Cabbage, Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavash, Chad, Zeke, Chris, Brigham, Andrew, Sam, Luik, Logan, Liz, Jordan, and Gio. We also have Gio. I think Gio's new, too.
Gio's brand new. Yes,
Gio's new since last time we did a show. I forgot that he wasn't on the last show when we went through this. So thanks to Gio as well. So we got Kavash back. We got Gio, who's new. Good times for the Patreon. We appreciate that.
Yes, sir. We'll take all that money you will give us, and we will spend it on games and other things to make this show slightly more entertaining. I'd like to tell you that we spent a lot of time playing games over the last 2 weeks, and we have. We've played a fair amount, but we've not played nearly as much as we should have because it's October, there's football, and there's playoff baseball.
Yes.
Right? So pretty much the only thing that you can play during playoff baseball is Bolatro. Like, that's pretty much it. I played a lot of Bolatro. We've got another big game that we will talk about in a minute here, because we've had lots of both of us, I think, have played a fair amount of Frostpunk 2. That is,
just had to show Jamie a Bolatro running on my phone because that's a thing now. So, there is Bolatro on my phone.
Say goodbye to your productivity, ladies and gentlemen.
I surprisingly have not spent a whole lot of time on it, in part because I've been playing Frostpunk 2. Like Jamie said, we'll talk more about that here in just a little bit. Also, in part because I've been playing something else. Let's see if I can show it to you as well. Retro Bowl, which is a game that I love.
Ooh.
On the phone, has an official like license with the NFL now. And so there are licensed teams and players and all of that stuff on Retro Bowl, which is
That's
incredibly
fantastic.
Fun. on the phone, on mobile devices. And so if you have Apple Arcade specifically, it's on Apple Arcade. So you get no additional costs there and no ads and all that. I really dig Apple Arcade. I don't know that we've talked about this very much.
We have not, and we need to, because I just got... I told you, I haven't told anybody else, but I'm officially an Apple.
Yes.
I'm officially an Apple cultist, and I hate to say that, but that's really what it is. I've got the phone, I've got the watch, I'm officially completely switched over. It's all tied into the Mac, and so when you sent me a text for the show, like, I was sitting here and answered that on messages on the Mac. So I'm fully an Apple guy. We've been Apple guys for a long time, and I've totally, completely converted. And I have access to Apple Arcade because when you buy a new device, you get 3 months. I have not redeemed that because in my particular situation, I don't think it's going to be that much fun to play games on the phone because I don't hold the phone. Like any time that I use it, it's sitting on a Surface. And so I want to try it, but like it doesn't really make a lot of sense to redeem it, and so I feel bad because
I think that's fair. But I will say, if you do have an iPhone and you play a lot of mobile games, you could get Apple Arcade as part of like their package deal where you get iCloud storage and Apple TV, which also, by the way, as we've talked about a lot, Apple TV is pretty fantastic. Great shows on Apple TV that they do such a terrible job of promoting.
Yes.
It's always like, what is this show? And then I watch like the first two episodes. I'm like, this is like the best show ever. Why have I not heard of it? But anyway. Right. I digress. Apple Arcade, you could get as part of an Apple bundle, or you can get standalone.
So can we talk about how much is Apple One at this point? I know you've been on it for a little bit.
Yeah, I remember at this point, $20 or something like that.
Is that it? Holy cow.
Yeah, let me look. Don't quote me on that because I'm not entirely positive of what the numbers are at this point because it just comes out of my bank account and I don't think about it. So, it's way more than that. So the individual is $20 a month. So that's Apple Music, Apple TV, Apple Arcade, and 50 gigs of iCloud storage. That's where I get caught on it because I have more than 50 gigs of iCloud storage.
Okay.
The Premier, the Apple Premier, one Premier is $38 a month, but it's the 2 terabytes of iCloud storage plus other subscriptions that come along with it as well. But the base Apple One is $20 a month.
That's really not that bad.
It really isn't for Apple TV and Apple Arcade and Apple Music, like all of which are solid subscriptions. I don't use Apple Music.
I had access to Apple Music. I'm like, I'm not going to use that.
Yeah, because I was an early adopter for Spotify. I just have everything in Spotify and wanted to make the work to, you know, like I have all my playlists built. Like it knows me, my algorithms, it pulls up me, like just all that stuff that I just don't want to really start from scratch with. But all of that to say, if you only want one of those services and you play games on your phone or iPad, because it is on tablets as well, Apple Arcade is super cool. Again, in part because you just get these games ad-free, and that's just such a pain. So Genevieve's at the age where she's downloading tons and tons and tons of games on the iPad, and she just wants to download all the games that have all the ads. You know, and it's like you play for 20 seconds and then you get a 30-second ad. I'm like, what are you even doing? Like, this is ridiculous. So you get all the ad-free games. You get, like, the unlocked version of all the games that have existed outside of Apple Arcade, which are lots of them. Or you get games that are exclusive to Apple Arcade, and it's a lot of really good stuff. Like, they have really quality stuff. So, like, Balatro is on Apple Arcade. Vampire Survivors is on Apple Arcade. Retro Bowl. Like, almost all of the games that I play on a regular basis at this point are games I download off Apple Arcade, mostly because I know I don't have to worry about ads. I know that they're going to be pretty good quality games. NBA 2K 24, 25 is on there. Like, it's just solid stuff. And so if that's a way you pass your time, it's $7 a month, I think, $6 or $7 a month standalone. For me, that's worth it. I haven't paid for a game, an app on my phone in years, but I pay, you know, the Apple Arcade subscription, play all these premium games, and I really, really dig it. So didn't mean to, for that to become a commercial for Apple Arcade, but I really do like it as a service. So.
We're going to go a step further because I would love to talk to somebody at Apple about the way that they have set up, because I have an Apple Watch. You have an Apple Watch. I just saw it on your wrist. Like we're both Apple Watch guys, and I have my watch set up to where it's supposed to unlock my Mac and unlock my phone, and it only works about 1 out of every 10 times. And I think the reason why is because it's somehow tied to Face ID. And so if I roll up to the table and the camera gets just the right view of me, it will unlock. And I would really like to talk to somebody at Apple about the fact that I can't pick up my phone and show the camera my face. And so what really needs to happen is they need to come up with some other security measure on the watch where the watch will just unlock the phone when I roll up to it.
Yeah.
Because right now, the way it's set up, it doesn't work for somebody that can't physically hold the phone up.
Yeah.
And so little things like that, I just don't work correctly because of my situation. And it's like that with every company. But for the most part, I'm really loving this Apple experience. I saw a video on YouTube that apparently, if we really drill down, every iPhone since the iPhone 10 is the most intrusive device ever made. and I haven't actually watched that video, but there's a security guy up there that says they are awful as far as privacy and that type of thing. And he's probably right. Like, I've got it monitoring my sleep, and I've got it, like, checking to see if I've got sleep apnea, and I've got, you know, the whole thing. And like, I know they're stealing my crap.
Right.
I know they are. But the service is good, so I'm kind of okay with it.
Yeah, I generally agree. We're, you know, like, this is going to sound so dystopian, and I guess, yeah, I do mean it that way, but we're at the point where, like, I realize my privacy is not really a thing, you know. Yeah. Like, it just doesn't. I mean, there are things that we obviously, like, I don't want everybody to have my bank account information, I don't want everybody to have my social security, you know, like, there are things, right, that I care about my devices, like, being able to keep private, and for the most part they do okay. Obviously there's bunches, yeah, of times where that stuff fails too, but like, just consumer habits, like, I've just long given up any like sense of like my devices not knowing like what I'm searching for on Amazon. Like, it knows, and it's going to show me ads or whatever anytime. I don't know what the algorithm is from Sweetwater. Anytime I look up, yeah, anything on Sweetwater, I just, yes, get bombarded by it for like the next week. And I'm just like, why?
Sweetwater is a great example, because I do the same thing. You look up one thing and you're looking at it for like the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. And that's kind of the price of modern technology convenience. And I love technology. Like, I'm not shy in saying that all of the fun things that I get from my phone and my computer and my tablet and my watch and all those things, like, they make my life better. Like, they are things that, for the most part, like, there are also things in that don't always make my life better, but for the most part, they are things that are net positive. And the thing I know that I'm paying for that is I am making my personal information a commodity in the economy. And do I love that? No. Am I going to stop doing all these things that I enjoy technology in order to prevent that from happening? Also, no. You know, like, well, it just is what it is.
We haven't really talked about it on the show, and this is not gaming related. but this watch on my wrist is an Apple Watch Ultra, so that I'm the tool walking around in public that has an $800 watch. And I feel awful about that, but the entire reason that I did it, like the alarm system that I have in my house is on the watch, and I can turn the alarm on and turn the alarm off and lock the doors and do all of that stuff, which I couldn't do before I got this watch. And so I spent 2 weeks with the Series 9, and I was like, this is great. This is awesome. I have to have it on my wrist. Especially when I'm at home at night by myself for 8 to 10 hours while I sleep. Like, I have to have it on my wrist. And so I can't charge it every night. And so after 2 weeks with the Series 9, I was like, I got to have more battery life. And so now I'm the guy with the $800 watch on my wrist because I need it to last longer. And I feel bad about that. Nobody needs an Apple Watch Ultra. Nobody needs an Apple Watch. But it makes life so much easier for somebody like me to be able to lock my house up, set the alarm, and like I can open the freaking garage door, which I could not do with my Android device.
Yeah.
And so it's a life-changing kind of situation. And like, really, seriously, I hate that I have spent all of this money to get into the Apple ecosystem, but I'm looking at it going, you know what? It's kind of worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm right there with you. And the joys of modern convenience are worth all the other things. So, speaking of dystopia, though, strong segue into Frostpunk, just not at all like an Apple Watch.
We got lots to talk about here, because
we got to talk about Frostpunk, because last time I had just put a little bit of time into it. Now I've put tons of time into it. I know you've put a lot of time into it, and so Frostpunk.
I haven't played anything else but Bellagio for 2 weeks. Like, I was having fun with Midnight Suns. I haven't touched Midnight Suns in 2 weeks. I haven't touched Cyberpunk. I miss them both. Like, I saw a YouTube video about Cyberpunk Orion. I was like, dude, I gotta go back to that. But I've been playing Frostpunk for 2 weeks, and I feel really bad because I love the 11-bit guys. It's a fantastic game. It looks great. But I last night, okay, I knew we were doing this show today. And so last night I had to make a decision. Like, I'm watching baseball and I'm like, okay, what do I do when the game is over? Do I watch you play what's on the YouTube? Watch you play Final Fantasy VII, or do I go back to Frostpunk? I chose to finish up the Final Fantasy VII because I'm in Chapter 2 on Frostpunk, and I have just gotten to the Dreadnought and gotten the oil from the Dreadnought and transferred the 75,000 oil to New London, and that's a big goal. Like, it's like, you know, you're trying to get to that all the way. That's the big thing in Chapter 2. And so I transfer the oil, and it lasts like 3 seconds. And then I'm like out of coal, and there's no more oil. And I feel like Sisyphus just pushing the boulder up the hill. And I got to be honest with you, I'm curious if you feel the same way. The game is great. I like the game, but like when I was looking at it last night going, what do I do before we have the show tomorrow? I literally thought to myself, I don't want to play Frostpunk because I'm tired of juggling knives.
Yep.
And I don't know, how do you feel about that? Because the game's great, but like, you can't, it's worse than golf. There's no, what I was really hoping for, if the 11 that guys are listening, It took me several hours and several reloads to figure out how to get everything managed and to get to the Dreadnought and to get the oil. And I really wanted, after that happened, just a couple of days of peace.
Right. Like,
can I have a couple of days to you know, fix my houses? Because I got crime going on. There's vandalism. And there, can I have a couple of days where everybody's happy and there's enough food? And like, can I just have that? They didn't give me that.
Yeah.
And so when that hit me, it was like, well, crap. I don't want to. I'm done for a little bit.
Yes. I have had a very similar journey with Frostpunk for sure. And it does get very frustrating at times because it's a pretty relentless game. And that's intentional. You know, obviously that's the design that they were going for. And so I started playing on the campaign mode, got into chapter two, got just buried under everything piling up like you're talking about, and said, I'm not really enjoying the campaign so much. And so what I did is I just went and started a endless mode doing the Utopia thing. And it like gives you a little thing at the beginning of like when you start a Utopia mode that's like, we suggest that you play through the campaign first and then do this. I was like, screw that. I just want to like build a society and see what happens. And so I did that with two or three different societies that I also just ran flat into the ground, right? Like just like they ended up miserable. But each one of those taught me the mechanics of the game way better than the campaign mode did. And so in my like thinking of it, and it may just be me, but the way that it worked for me is I played two or three just kind of build your own communities again, like until they failed essentially. Like I never ran one all the way until like the game was like, hey, you suck, because I gave up on it before then. You know, it's like, okay, this is a lost cause, let me go start a new one. Picked a different map and played with it for a while and figured out kind of the balance and the flow and what things I need to prioritize when. And then I said, okay, I think I've got a better grasp on the game, and went back to the campaign mode and ran through the campaign mode. Not that it was super easy, but I was able to like do everything in the campaign mode. And it made so much more sense to me because of like all the trial and error I had done on my like individual society. So I've made it all the way through the campaign, which is super cool. And has, you know, like, it's not a heavy story game, but it does have good, interesting little narrative bits in there and that kind of stuff. And then I went back and said, okay, now I've made it through the campaign, I'm going to go back to the Utopia Builder. And there's like three different scenarios it gives you for like success. And I just said, throw me one at random. And it was making, you know, like prosperous colonies. And so you have to set up like three colonies, one focus on fuel, one focus on materials, one focus on food or whatever, and then solve all the like five major problems in your main city or whatever. And I just finished with that one last night. So I've played all the way through essentially now on both the campaign mode and on the Utopia mode. And I'm pretty much done, I think, with Frostpunk at this point, because I think I've seen just about all of it that there is. But I feel really good about it now that I've gone back and done it in like the reverse order of what they suggest. And it just, I don't know why it worked for me, but like it got me to the point, because I was almost ready to give up on it and go, I'm just not enjoying this as much as I want to bring it back to like every spare moment I had. I was like, I'm going to fire up Frostpunk because I just want to work on my city a little bit more. And like, my utopian city that I built is in like pure chaos as far as like the factions go. The factions is a really cool element of this. Yeah. And so I've got like the technocrats and the ice bloods that just hate each other. And I unlocked the thing where I'm like a king, essentially. Like I can pass anything. Like there's not votes
the
anymore.
The guy is voting or the next step?
No, because the very end step of all of that. And so the very last step of all the rule, like tree or whatever, is like your votes just always succeed. They're just 100 votes for you every time. You're not the steward anymore. You're the captain of the city. And so it changes your title. You're now the captain or whatever.
Yeah.
And every vote succeeds, the little like approval bar at the bottom goes away. But like the factions don't like all love you. They still protest. They still get pissed at you. And so like they were just all about to kill each other. I just have people dying all the time. Like they're just killing each other in the streets. I've got guard towers everywhere. But I have my colonies, and I have heat and food and, you know, shelter and materials for everybody. And so, like, even though they're killing each other, it's like, oh, it's okay. We're warm at least. I'm like, cool. Y'all got it. You know, but even in like success in the game, like everybody still hates each other. Like there's just no way in this game to like make everybody happy and fulfill everybody's needs. Like it just, it, and that's part of the fun, interesting part of the game.
So I was about to ask, you need five key, because my issue with chapter two at this point is that like I've done everything as strategically as I think, like I've reloaded probably 15 times. I'm like, okay, I have to build these housing units here, and I have to do this with the coal, and I have to get this certain type of mine. And I've done everything right, and I've got the logistics station, and I've gotten to the dreadnought, and I've gotten to other, where I have another community sending me food and all of that. But like, even with all of that, even getting the 75,000 oil, now I'm out of like coal, and I've burned through the 75,000 oil, and now they're saying you, there's this other thing I got to get that lets me get unlimited fuel from that dreadnought to makes it like I'm out of fuel. Like when I put it back up, it's gonna get cold, and everybody's gonna be screaming and saying we're not. And I don't know what to do at this point. The reason that I bring all of this up is that I hate to say this because I love those guys. We love those guys because they were one of the first interviews that, you know, we had on this show, and they've been great to us, but like they did a really bad job of explaining the mechanics and how everything works and a heat stamp, and like I still don't know how to generate income, and like, to their credit, nobody on the internet can really explain it either. Because my go-to is to go to YouTube and just look it up. And nobody can really explain it either. Everybody that you look at is like, oh, it's easy. You just do this, and you do this, and you add this. And you... No, nobody really can explain the mechanics. And I feel like, especially with this last thing that I'm talking about, I feel like that I played it correctly, and I'm still out of fuel. So what do I do now?
Yeah, it really is like figuring out how to make everything as efficient as you can. And so it's not just about collecting enough fuel, but it's also using as little fuel as you can to, you know, meet kind of your minimum standards. And so it's never having like an excess of housing or an excess of like building places that are working, because all of, like, if you have everything at like full employment, it's all using heat. But if you turn that employment down, it also takes the heat requirements down. And so you just keep everything enough to like fill up your stockpiles and not be doing more than you need to control your efficiency.
So basically, when you build something, you turn it down as far as you can possibly turn it down and still get what you need.
Yes.
Whether it's housing or, see, I never thought of that, and nobody said that.
Right. It doesn't tell you that. That's like one of those things that you just kind of stumble upon it. Cause I think I figured that out when there was a protest and like one of my housing districts wasn't working anymore, but I was also using less heat. I was like, oh, that's interesting, because they're not working. They're not required. And so I started playing with it. I'm like, oh yeah, this works. And you can, you know, like do research. And like, that's the research and passing laws are such a big thing, because you can, like, heat stamps is a really good example. You can just make your heat stamp income go up by, you know, some of those laws that you pass. And so where you're
see, but I think that's the thing, is I haven't gotten that far with the laws, because it's taken me all of this time to figure out, okay, how do I build this? Where do I put these certain whether it's a factory or a housing district or whatever, to get the most heat bonus I can get. And like, it's taking me, I need to look and see how many hours. I bet I've spent 30 hours. just okay, that didn't work, reload. Yep. That didn't work, for reload. Sure. And
this is to the kind of opposite side of what you were saying, to 11-bit's credit in a way. Like, that's what they wanted you to do, right? Like, they want you to fail at this game. They want it to be frustrating just up until the point that you don't give it up, which, again, like, I was right on the precipice. Like, they almost lost me, but not quite, you know? I just came back around and was able to get back into it. But, I mean, it is supposed to be a brutal game. Like, it is supposed to be a game right. that frustrates
and
you.
And I'm not saying that. Like, that's what they do. That's what they did with the right. original Frostpunk. That's what they did with this Warmind. But at this point, it's beyond frustration. It's like, I don't know how to do this. And
that's the balance that's really hard to find.
It's frustrating because we've played City Builders all our lives. Like, we started with SimCity on the Super Nintendo, for crying out loud, before either one of us had, you know, computers. I think
right.
you started with what's Sid Meier's very first one?
The Colonization was right. the first one I got into.
Right.
Sid Meier's stuff, yeah.
Like, we've done this our whole lives, and I'm not frustrated because it's hard. I'm frustrated because I don't see a way to win given the resources I've been given.
That's the thing, is like, you can't win in the same metrics if we think of winning in all of those other games that we played, because in all of those other games, like, your goal is to like meet the like basic requirements of all of the needs of, you know, whatever it is, your city right. or your civilization or whatever it is. And in Frostpunk, it's to meet just enough to not kill everybody, but something is going to get dropped. Like, yeah. you've got to make those sacrifices. And that's where it gets so frustrating. And what's, like, the one thing that I did that is so, again, dystopian, and, you know, like, you just kind of go, okay, like, this is the way I play the game, is I just said, screw people dying. Like the one thing that a lot of people dying does is it brings your trust levels way down. And so you have to kind of watch that, but you can buy people off, you know, like, you can, once you have like a lot of, cause you'll get to a point where you just have more heat stamps than you could ever spend. Like, you just have so much after a while. And I'm just like, here, have money here, you know, like, and I'm just paying people off. And like, at the same time, I get the little pop up down at the bottom of the screen, like, 400 people died attending machines today. And I'm like, shucks, you know, like, keep on going, guys.
I mean, honestly, I hate to say this, but like, I kind of feel like that's where we're at in the United States. Here,
I know.
It's all good. Just have money. It's all, like, here, take this check. Like, stimulus.
My, again, quote unquote utopia here. I'm using that term very, very generously, because, again, like, I met all the needs of my society. And so, like, basic needs were done. But I have, I'm trying to remember, like, all of the just terrible laws I enacted that are just miserable, trying to keep like people from completely rioting. But like, I have like forced procreation, so everybody has to have babies. communal parenting, so you don't raise your own child. And so, like, yeah, parent, like, you know, the little like just story messages that pop right. up. There's like all these sad ones that are like, Sally doesn't get to see her son anymore. She can hear him crying in the streets for her. And it's like, do you like soften the rules and let her have visitation rights, or say, nope, screw you, like, this is the rule? And I'm like, nope, screw you, you know, like, it's just so brutal. You just have to, like, you don't have to can be a good person or try to be a good person, but if you really want to be like successful, you just have to like disconnect from that. So I have like public executions. I deport people out into the Frostland when they're like not agree. You know, it's just like really brutal stuff. But so it worked. And so I'm like, oh.
It's interesting that middle part of last week, I was researching, trying to figure things out, and I thought, okay, I'll watch the IG interview and see what they say. And that guy, I don't remember who did the review, said the exact same thing. He said the only flaw with this is that once I figured out that the people are just numbers on a spreadsheet and they don't really matter, then you like that's I'm not, and you said it last week, I'm not emotionally connected to these people, and they're just numbers on a spreadsheet. And I guess that's the tactic you have to take to make it work, because I had probably an hour and a half to 2 hours where there was enough housing, enough food, enough. I've never had enough goods. I don't know how
you
manage the goods.
I've never.
But I had probably an hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours where everything was kind of there. And I'm like, okay, now I'm going to set up the logistic thing and I'm going to get the dreadnought. And I'm going to get the oil and we're going to be on our way. And then I got the oil and it was like, you burn it. And it's like, okay, well, what now? Like, I'm out of everything. And
Yeah, let me say just really briefly on goods. That's one that I never put hardly any effort into, because what you can do instead is build guard towers, because lack of goods increases crime, but guard towers decrease crime. And like, I never had a problem with crime, even though I always ran a deficit. I
had trouble with crime. So
yeah, that's you got to unlock the guard towers and it just takes it down. But this is bigger point of going to what you said, because the two games from 11-bit that we talk about all the time, Frostmunk and This War of Mine, we talked about in the last show, couldn't be more different in how you connect to that world. And I think if they were able to like bring those two experiences under one umbrella, that you have the management element of what Frostpunk is, but at the same time, you're following a narrative arc of specific individuals that are in the city, like you do in This War of Mine, that you... maybe embody a character. We mentioned Sid Meier a little while ago. I'm thinking about Peter Molyneux and the new game that he showed off at Gamescom, right? I don't remember what it was called. But
Heroes of Albion, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Whatever. Something of Albion. Anyway, where the idea was you're the god mode, like populist thing that is, you know, very Peter Molyneux, but then you also get to inhabit the character and walk around. And that execution didn't really get me excited. But thinking of Frostpunk meets This War of Mine in that same kind of execution, that same kind of mechanic where you both have to do like the management of the civilization, and you have to actually get personally connected to the people and how you are affecting them, that would make me play the game a whole lot differently, because at that point it would be a whole lot more difficult to just see the people as numbers on a spreadsheet, but you're now connecting with them as like stories. And at that point, like, and this may be the, like, now that we're talking through it, I'm like, maybe I want to do one more playthrough of, like, trying to do, like, a just, like, morally good society.
See, that's what the
challenge of that is.
What I did, and you can't do it.
Yeah, you're always going to have to make compromises of that.
You can't, because that's what my call, like, okay, one example, and I didn't expect this to take as long as it has, but one example, you get to the very start of chapter two, the first couple hours of chapter two, it says you need to research mining and figure out which mine research you're going to do, and you need to put the building in and whatever.
Yeah.
There's a part with that.
Yes.
Where it says the Frostlander says, okay, we can get more out of the mine if we send the kids down there. Nope. And this is right after I had seen the IGN review. And so I'm like, yeah, let's do that. And then the mine catches fire and it says, do you get the people out or do you keep the coal deposits? The first time I did it, I got the kids out and everybody was happy. But then about 10 minutes later, they're mad because we lost the coal deposit and And like, it's things like that. Like, I'm trying to be a morally good person, and it works until you get about 100 weeks in. Like, you can do it until you get about 100 weeks in, and you start running low on coal, and you start running low on food, and you're like, there's a point at about 60 weeks in the playthrough that I'm currently running right now where, like I said, everybody's happy, and there's enough housing, and there's enough heat, and now I'm thinking I'm not going to start completely over at the beginning of chapter two. I'm just going to go back to that point, wherever that point is, where the stockpiles are getting filled, and turn everything down and just see what happens.
Yeah. That's the other big thing, is save often. It's just the number of times I'm like, whoops, screwed that up, let me go back an hour, you know. And just all the time.
And I'm not saying all this to say that it's a great game, that did a fantastic job. It looks ridiculous. Unreal 5 is great. I heard a rumor that the new Cyberpunk is going to be on Unreal 5 as opposed to Red Engine.
Yes.
That makes me excited, because Unreal 5 is ridiculous.
Yep.
I don't know what you did with your settings, but it was like, this is what we recommend. And I was like, screw that. I'm
right.
City Builder, I'm going to turn it up. And I'm getting like 75 frames a second, which in the City Builder doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter at
but
all.
But it looks absolutely fantastic.
Yes.
It's ridiculously good. And they did a great job. I don't hate the game. It's just, it beats you down. It's like, crap, I don't want to play this.
Yes, it is. For anybody who hasn't played it, which I'm sure is most people, because it's also a fairly niche game. But if it's something that, hearing us rant on about it for this long, if it's something that you're like, that kind of interests me, just know, like, it's incredibly dark if you haven't already got that, because I was like, screw the kids, bye. You know, yeah. Like, you just got to have to make those decisions, which, again, is hard, but
I'm interested to get you to walk me through it, because I haven't gotten to the point with the laws.
Yeah,
that where you are, because it took me probably 3 reloads before I figured out that you didn't have to negotiate with anybody.
Yeah,
as long as the number of people that agree with you outweighs the number of people that are against you, you're going to past the law. Like, it took me 3 reloads before I figured that out. And so, like, my next question to you is, and we don't have time to fill it here, you and I can talk off the air, but like, I don't know how you got to the point with the laws that you got, because I'm 120 weeks in. I just got to the dreadnought, and like, I'm just juggling. Like, they're telling me I gotta get the skyways so I can get the fuel. Yep. And like, I want to know how you did the laws and got to where you got, because that seems to be very important.
Yes, for sure. It's just massive amounts of multitasking. That's the other thing. It's just, you got to be keeping up with 37 things at the same time. So all that to say, it is incredibly dark, and it is going to frustrate you. And yet it is also really interesting.
It's really
and
good.
Ultimately fun.
Guys, if you're listening, it's really good. I'm not saying it's bad.
But it is very frustrating.
Right.
It will get you frustrated.
Yeah.
So just be prepared.
Yeah.
But it is fantastic, so go check it out. All that said, we do have some news. We'll try to get to a few bits of it at least here before we're done, but that was a good discussion. I enjoyed that thoroughly. So I mentioned in the open about Steam now telling gamers up front that you are not buying a game, which, again, we have talked about this a ton on this show. This isn't anything new, but the transparency of it is, and this has come about, it seems like, primarily because of a law that was passed in California that's essentially a truth in advertising kind of law about digital content, and saying that you can't tell somebody that they're buying a game or a movie or whatever it is when there's not a guarantee that they will always have it, that you purchase it and it is now yours in some format that cannot be revoked. And so on Steam, this came up fairly recently in a pretty, or just in general, not just on Steam, but Steam is part of this. But this came up pretty recently in an example where Ubisoft deleted The Crew, shut down the servers for The Crew, and then removed it from people's libraries. Like, you had that game, right, and now you don't have that game anymore because they shut it down, essentially, which pissed a lot of people off, and understandably so. You buy a game, even if it's not a game that you play, you're still like, I bought that game. Why did you delete it? Because it's mine. And that's not ever been the case, but hasn't been the case for quite a while. And there's just this kind of understanding that everybody kind of gets that. You don't really own any of this stuff.
So let's be real clear for a second. I get it. You get it. Everybody gets it. But we also have an expectation of, I paid for this.
Right.
And when I want to access it, I want to access it. Like I don't think I'm misspeaking there. We understand and have for a long time that it's a license. But if let's take Midnight Suns, for example. I bought Midnight Suns in a sale on Epic. If I go to fire up Midnight Suns to play it, and they say you don't have access to this anymore, but they got my money and I don't get my money back, like
right,
I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah,
right. Like, I'm going to be pissed. And so you can say, everybody understands. But if I go to fire up a game and it's not there anymore and nobody's giving me my money back, that's a problem.
Yep. And to be clear, that is the system that exists right now. It fortunately very rarely happens, but it does happen. And The Crew is a prime example of where it did happen. Like, it very clearly happened in that situation. This does happen from time to time. And so now when you buy a game on Steam, again, I use buy generously there, you buy a license to play a game on Steam. It pops up with a little disclaimer that says a purchase of a digital product grants a license for the product on Steam. And then you can go into their, full end user agreement and see what exactly that entails. And it goes through the details there of what a license is and when it can be, revoked or eliminated, all the details of it. But, again, we know this in this kind of digital economy, what this is, but nobody fesses up to it. And now they're having to fess up to it. It's not going to change it. There's nothing that's going to improve about this. Like, we live in a service economy that used to be product-based. Video games used to be you went and bought a physical product, a disc, a cartridge, a whatever it was, and that was your ability to play that game until your disc got scratched up or your console stops working or whatever. Like, there's always been reasons that would eventually go away. Like, it wasn't eternal. But you understood that your ownership of something that you could tangibly put in your hand meant that you had access to this. And once we got to the point that you no longer have something tangible in your hand, like, this has all gotten weird and wonky and convoluted. And this is just saying, yep, it's weird and wonky and convoluted, and we want to make sure that you're aware that you don't actually own this product. You own a license for this product, which is true. It has been for a while, but this is how it's going to be, and for better or for worse, that's where we are.
We don't have time to talk about it, but I'm going to bring it up anyway, because also this week I read a story on Engadget where they're talking about that everybody that has an issue with Valve at this point, there's no more arbitration. Again, that has to do with laws and things, and they're trying to be they're trying to be upfront and transparent, and I applaud them for that. But now, if you have an issue with Valve, there's no more arbitration. You go straight to court. Yep. You pay the court costs. It's very clear. Like, this is what we're doing, because there were people gaming the system, and with class action lawsuits, and they were just getting slammed. I have been a Valve fanboy for as long as we have run this show, and yeah. I believe that the people from Gabe Newell down are fundamentally good people that just want gamers to be able to play games, and yeah, they want to make money in the process. But out of all the companies that I think could possibly screw me over, Valve is way down that list. Now, there's a lot of people who listen to the show could email and, like, this happened or that happened, or, whoa, like, they did this or that or whatever. But, like, I'll put Valve on the list before Epic and Apple and a whole bunch of other people, as far as companies that I trust. And from my perspective, when I saw this, my immediate thought was, well, there's people gaming the system. They're just trying not to get killed legally, because if they go bankrupt, it's all over anyway, and we lose everything. Yep. And so I would like to sit here and rant like we did back in the day, that, you know, it's the evil empire. Like, we spent years on this show talking about EA, the evil empire. And I, for the life of me, maybe I'm older, maybe I'm wiser, maybe I'm naive because I just like Valve, but I don't see all of this as them moving toward being the evil empire.
Yeah, it is, to make an analogy to Frostpunk, of all things, that we've just been talking about. Like, it's just the reality of what the current economy is, that how this works and what it looks like. And I agree with you. Valve has done a great job of building brand loyalty, and you and I have been a part of that for a long, long time. You, even before me, like, that's one of the first things we talked about on the show, yeah, when Steam was brand new and just all the things. They have done a good job over the years of establishing and preserving that brand loyalty. And at the same time, they also have to play within kind of both the rules. And so, again, this is pushed by a law that's not gone into effect yet, but it's going to. And so they're just getting ahead of it, which is fine. They need to, but that makes sense. The truth in advertising is important. And so I support that idea. But also, like, just how the economy works at this point, how the gaming economy works. Like, they are a company that is going to play within the kind of understood operational procedures of the industry, because they want to be successful in the industry. And of course, Valve could say, hey, we're taking this big stand. We're going to make all of your games available offline. You know, none of these games will ever go away. We promise you that, like, you buy it, you own it, like, whatever it is. But you can't. Like, it just isn't a thing that exists, in part because basically everything Valve sells at this point isn't theirs, and so they don't have control over any of that stuff, and because it's just not the way that the industry works, and you got to work within the industry that you're in. And so, like, it's just the necessity of it. And so where in Frostpunk you just got to make these decisions because it's the world that you got, this is Valve just making those decisions because it's the world that they've got. This is the industry that they live in. And again, as much as we go, I hate seeing the word license. I want, yeah, to buy a game, not a license for a game. But we've been buying licenses for games for well over a decade at this point, almost exclusively. Like, almost every game I own, I can't tell you the last physical game that I bought, you know, like, right, basically every game I quote unquote own could go away at any second. We are under the understanding, we have trust in these companies, that that's not going to happen on a regular basis. but we also know that it can happen, and we could be pissed when it happens, and we could say this is bad practices when it happens, and that's all good. Like, I'm not saying don't do that. The people who were pissed over the crew being removed from their libraries, totally justifiable. Yes, should be pissed, but it's not illegal or anything. Like, you know, like it is within the rights of what you've said. Yep, click agree when you were clicking through all the stuff very quickly, as I do too. I'm not reading in user license agreements, but that's what you're clicking to. You know, like that's you could be pissed about it, but you already agreed to it in order to play the game in the first place, because you weren't going to play the game if you didn't agree to it. Like, we all know this. Like, again, even if you're not thinking about that actively, that is how this works. And we should say that. Like, again, I appreciate the fact that Valve has to put this disclaimer on there now, but just to say it, like, it's good to say it in really obvious, simple terms. You just realize this is what you're doing. Sucks, but is the industry. And
yeah,
that's where we are. So to shift to not as bummer of news, we'll mention just a few things about Tokyo Game Show, because we, like we said, it did happen. There's two things I would just push your attention towards. We won't get into them a ton here, because in part you just need to go see them, but you can find links to this in the show notes, or just go to YouTube. There's new footage of Death Stranding 2, which is just stupid. Like, it just is. It's Uncanny Valley at times. Like, that's my biggest worry about it, is it's going to be a little too Uncanny Valley, but it is really, really gorgeous. They showed off a photo mode, which, again, I couldn't care less.
Yeah, what? We don't have time, but can you please explain to me why every game that exists at this point has a photo mode? I love Cyberpunk. I love it. Cyberpunk does not need a freaking photo mode.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
I'm with you. The like, and I say this as somebody, like, I'm an amateur photographer. Like, yes. I like photography. I have some pride in my ability as a photographer. I don't have any desire to take photos in games, you know, like, because there's in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, there's like mini quests, side quests that are like photo mode side quests. Just go to this place and use photo mode to take a picture. And I'm like, okay, just do it. Like, I'm not trying to frame this up. I'm not trying to capture the right lighting. I'm not like, I'm just like, yep, get it done. You know, click, done. Go back and get my XP. You know, like, I just can't just bring myself to care about it again. But all that said, the visuals that they showed off in showing photo mode, which is just three of the characters like dancing around, like ridiculous social media kind of like stuff. Like, again, it just is cringy to me in that sense. But graphically, I was like, oh my God. Like, the first time I saw it, I was like, that's live action. Like, that's not computer generated. And then you could kind of see in the face, I was like, oh crap. That, because Elle Fanning is one of the characters that plays one of the characters. And I was like, that's just Elle Fanning. Like, that's,
This isn't
computer generated until like she moved her mouth, and then it made my skin crawl in that kind of uncanny valley way. And I went, whoa, that's weird.
It is crazy. I've been a huge fan of Dakota Fanning since she was like 5, and now Elle's doing video games, and like,
it's wild.
Like, it's crazy. And I will freely admit that I have not seen this video, but the idea that we're getting where we're getting to in game, like, it freaks me out a little bit, because you add that into the fact that we have things going on with AI and like, it's gonna be that we're getting to a point where you could show up for this show and not be you, and I'm not sure that I would know,
right?
Like, that's a little scary to me. Like, I need you to come to my house and physically be in my house so I can make sure that you're you, because we're getting to the point where you might not be you.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of dystopian and all the places we're going, like, AI is going to be such a massive part of video games, and it's going to be wild. And I think that's the next big thing in the gaming world that could screw everything up, or like be amazing. I don't know what it's going to be, but that's a discussion for another day, but it's going to be a thing. So the other thing I would point people's attention towards is Metal Gear Solid Delta Snake Eater, the remake of Metal Gear Solid 3. Again, it's nothing new. There's two things I'd point out from it. It's beautiful, and it's just new footage, and it's great to see. And also, it's just so nice to hear David Hayter's voice.
Yeah!
Like, just it really is nostalgic in a way after Kiefer Sutherland, who did a perfectly fine job as Snake in Metal Gear Solid 5, but just isn't the same as David Hayter, who we grew up with. And so it was so nice.
We love you, V1. There's 8,000 games that we need to play, but I guarantee you the next time I see this man, we may have 8 zillion other games we need to play, but one of us will have purchased Snake Gear, and it will be put on this screen above my head in all of the resolution that we can possibly get. Yes. I can guarantee you that right now.
For sure. Two quick things before we wrap up. Just mention this one because it's just a quote and I just love it so much. This was from an interview with the lead designer on Starfield from Bethesda. About the question was about what did you learn from making Starfield? What's going to carry forward? And his response was, quote, fans really, really, really want Elder Scrolls 6, which I thought was just a beautiful summation of everything that is Starfield, which is by all accounts a perfectly fine game. I've played it, I haven't gotten into, but like that is the thing of it, is it's not your fan service, and fans want their fan service. And well,
and can we be honest about the reason that is the case? The reason that everybody wants Elder Scrolls 6 is because you're right, Starfield's a perfectly fine game, but it ain't Skyrim.
Yep.
And everybody is looking, like, for crying out loud, we got 8 zillion games to play, and I have my computer from my parents' house is in my closet right inside my front door because my dad told me I'm never coming home, and I'm starting to think he wasn't joking. And so my computer from their house is in the closet, and I'm telling you, when you get here, one of the things that you're going to do is pull the extra drive from that system, which has Skyrim on it. And you're going to help me install that into this system because as many games as you and I play, I constantly want to go back to Skyrim.
Yes.
That's how good it is. And so, no offense to Starfield, Duff is so frustrated that neither one of us has put significant amount of time into Starfield. It's like, we know what it is. It's a Bethesda game that ain't Skyrim, and therefore right. It doesn't really matter that much, right? Yes. Like,
I am really excited. I just haven't done it yet because I know it's going to be such a haul. But at some point, I'm putting Skyrim on the new rig and downloading every beautifying mod that I can and just seeing how freaking fantastic I can make Skyrim look in 2024 right. or 2025, because it almost certainly isn't happening this year. But like, yeah, I'm going to do it because Skyrim is phenomenal, and it's so fun to go in and just try to make it look better, play better, all the things.
Okay, so
break it a million times. It's a fun project.
Let me just finish it's not that everybody wants Elder Scrolls 6, because they could start development on Elder Scrolls 6 full on today with every team they've got. And they could get it out in the next 3, 4, 5, whatever the number is, and people be clamoring for it. But the second that it's not as good as Skyrim, which there's no chance that it's going to be as good as Skyrim, because you can't follow that, people are going to be pissed off. Yeah. Like, it just is what it is. Yeah, people want Elder Scrolls 6 because they want another Elder Scrolls 5. Good luck with that.
Yes, for sure. Last thing, because we promised it, Nintendo does have new hardware, and this may have been something you missed, but new hardware from Nintendo, it is not the Nintendo Switch Pro or the Switch 2 or any game console for that matter. It is an alarm clock, which was apparently something that Iwata really wanted to happen before he passed away, and they've made it a reality. The Alarmo, Nintendo Alarmo, the Nintendo alarm clock that looks like you would imagine a Nintendo alarm clock to look like, with the Mario red. It has different fonts on it that match all the different games. And so the Mario font or the Zelda font or whatever, with characters that will pop up on it, with music from all the games, and with, getting back to kind of some of the creepy privacy stuff, motion tracking in it that watches you while you sleep and will make noises as you wake up related to whatever game that you choose. So little Zelda noises as you like start to stir and get out of bed, and little fanfare music whenever you actually get up, and like just like chimes from your different games during the day. And just like, oh, it's so over the top and also amazing at the same time.
It's absurd, and we're both going to have one. Yeah. That's all we're saying.
It's also $100, $100 alarm clock, yeah, which is awful. And yeah, we're gonna figure out a way to get one of these things.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's nothing else that needs to be said about that. would you tell the sexy sidekick that this is going to happen? We're going to be lucky if she can get her eyes back to normal. Because the amount of eye roll that's going to happen is going to be absurd. But we have to have one of these.
Yes,
for sure. Just do. So
there is a video that shows you all about the Alarmo, which you can see at the show notes, gamingcensored.com, or just go look it up on YouTube. Really briefly, just tying into Nintendo a little bit, a couple of big Nintendo releases for the Switch. Super Mario Party Jamboree is out, an 82 on Metacritic, which for a Mario Party game, perfectly fine. That sounds great. And then Zelda, I don't think this had come out last time we did a show. It was right before. So Zelda Echoes of Wisdom has an 86 currently on Metacritic. And by all accounts, it's a solid game. You know, again, it's not Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom or something that level in the Zelda right. world. But it apparently is very fun and does Zelda well. And so looking forward to getting our hands on that one pretty soon. And then on Steam, I'll mention Neva. I'm not sure how to say this game, but I've just seen it pop up a couple of times. We saw it at something from Summer Game Fest with the you know, indie game show or the future game show or PC guy. I don't remember which one, or maybe a couple of them, but it's just this really beautiful side scroller Metroidvania looking game that apparently is pretty solid. And so if that's more your speed, Metaphor ReFantazio also out. This is the Persona world game. It has like a 93 on Metacritic or something really ridiculously high, because of course it does. And so a lot's out there for everybody, whatever you're looking for. Starship Troopers Extermination. very positive on Steam. So there you go. I mean, if you're buying the Starship Troopers game, you're probably already in that audience, but still. Good for them. So lots of games. We're not even into the big stuff. I saw that there's a limited edition Indiana Jones Xbox Series X that was announced to go along with that launch coming up soon. And so lots of games coming for the rest of the year. But yeah, some good stuff out now.
I love you, man, but you have got to find some vacation, and you've got to come stay in my house for about 2 weeks, because we have so much that we have.
It is so many ridiculous at this point, for sure.
It's absurd. I don't really know where to go from there. We need to wrap this thing up. There is so much to do. We are moving into the holidays. There's more games coming out. There's all kinds of things happening. And so hopefully you're going to see more of us. We hope, because this is a big time of year and lots of stuff going on. So stick with us the next couple of months. This is a great time of year. Holidays yes. are always good. So
100%. Stick with us.
If you would like to hang out with us, there's always a website, gamingcensored.com. I just tripped over my own freaking website, gamingcensored.com. We got the Facebook page, we have the Twitter. We try to be everywhere that we can possibly be. I saw our buddy Keith Brown on Saturday at the WT football game, and he asked me what was going on, and I told him, and he literally said, are you guys still on the air? we're still on it. We're still there. And he was like, yeah. How do I find it? And hey, he was serious. I was like, yeah, he'll listen to about 5 minutes and he'll be done. we love doing this thing. We hope you guys love it as well. It never, ever, ever gets old. And we hope you stay with us. For right now, is there anything else, sir? The voicemail line at
509-GAME-210.
That thing is still working. Call us, leave us a voicemail, and we will play it. Other than that, is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
I'm Jamie. That's Tommy. We are Gaming Uncensored, and we are out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gamingandcensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.